Hey, how you guys doing? It's producer of Brothers Comics. Welcome to the Marvel Hack. It's our X-Men 97 recap, y'all. We are going to get almost up to date. We had teased it before, what we were going to do, and we're going to execute that plan very much like the NFL draft. On the line is Brother Beavis. Say what's happening.
Hey, what's up, y'all?
Yes, this show is a first-round pick, by the way. it might have a couple of flaws, not character flaws, but, you know, there's... Only, I guess, lack of experience because there's not that many episodes. But, you know, the film they got on tape is first-round quality. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Like, in the pantheon of cartoons, like, you know, this definitely hits the ground running.
Yeah,
I mean, I think if we had a short discussion, like, Earth's Mightiest Heroes is up there. Like, Justice League got there, but... They had to sit on the bench for a couple years to kind of learn the position before they made the Pro Bowl for the first time.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, this is great, and I think it a lot of ways it fixes some, but then it is a different show from the first run. But like the production quality of it is so much better. Although there was some shaky aspects of episode 6.
And so what we had teased was that when Life Death came on part one, it ran in front of a Jubilee Sunspot and Mojo bit that, to be fair, we're not even really going to talk about because it's not really worth talking about. It's Mojo. That's basically it. And then it's ran on the interspersed with episode 6. In between this other story, which we're going to get to tonight. So we're going to combine Life, Death 1 and 2 and talk about episode 6 with Charles and Lilandra and the Shi'ar and do all of those together. And then we're going to kind of lead into a lead about episode 7 because as I had texted y'all after I watched it, it was the first filler episode. Not saying that it was bad, but it was definitely filler.
I might challenge that.
Okay, we'll get to it at the end. That's fine. We'll get to it at the end.
It was more to me. It was more like a issue zero. It was the setup for the story to follow. So.
That's fine. Yeah, filler. All right. Anyway, so let's go, y'all. So it's our comic book inspiration for Life, Death Parts 1 and 2. It was at 186. I got a typo over there, and then 198. So that's the funny part here. Like, everybody's like, oh, it's Life, Death, part 1 and 2. But this story spanned not just the Storm and Forge love story, but there's a whole ass dire race, Native American magical story that goes in between all of these issues. And again, however you feel about the Life, Death parts of it, and I have a feeling about it. It's definitely condensed. It probably, if you were going to do it, probably deserved more than the back end of an annual and interspersed in between another episode. Would you agree?
Yeah. And it, again, like the thing that's hit me about this is they are just churning through, like, you know, not only the number of stories, but the complexity of stories and the number and the way they're getting through it. My take was either like they were assuming they were going to get canceled before they finished the story, which at this point would be ridiculous because there's not another thing of this quality, I think, that they're putting out, Marvel are putting out, like, in any platform. Or they're trying to bridge between, you know, the classic era and the modern era and burn through this sort of dead period of like the 2000s. Late 90s, whatever, just to try and get to where all of this stuff makes sense with the contemporary MCU.
Right.
Because I think that's the thing is, right, you could still have X-Men stories playing out, but to get to maybe the kind of interaction or where the MCU, where the rest of the MCU is, you kind of necessarily have to bring the X-Men into that future realm of storytelling.
Right. Yeah, again, and I don't know if as much as a criticism or it's just like, man, that was really fast that you told that story so quickly. You know, it's had a lot more depth to it. But again, 10 episodes, they've already been approved for season 2. Like, it's, yeah. And I think it's already in the can. We just have to wait for it to come out. And I'm sure I read something that they were saying that they would like to you know, do another two seasons kind of like back to back or whatever. And again, like most shows, cartoons, musicians, artists or whatever, like a little is enough. And then once you start getting into that part where, hey, we want to produce it just because we can and we should, then you start to lose the quality a little bit, which happened with the original cartoon. Yeah. You know, they told a story and they were like, oh yeah, by the way, we got to do two more seasons after Dark Phoenix. What?
Yeah.
Never mind. Like, and what's the point?
And that's, you know, a lot of the first series fell apart because they were trying to tell the stories, but like subbing in different characters or not, like, cause they did some semblance of like the Age of Apocalypse or things like that. But it was like just with a patchwork of characters or just other stuff they'd made up in the background. So it got weird. Like you could kind of like draw a line between that and a comic book somewhere, but kind of not. So,
yeah,
you know, they were, you know, we were struggling to think about like, what are the stories that, you know, they're, you know, what are they going to do? And they've definitely like, you know, hit on some, you know, even if it's just, you know, a significant issue or a significant storyline, they've definitely picked up some important stories or moments for different characters. But at this pace, they are going to outrun, you know, the things that are worth putting on a show for sure.
And you're going to outrun the, what I would call the standard people that are reading. It's like wrestling. There's people that like stick with wrestling no matter what, and they're watching WWE now, and they might dip into AEW, and just because that's what their habit is, that's what it is. But it's a very small niche audience that we found out. There's not a real like crossover appeal for really wrestling now. I think comics are the same way. There are people like us that enjoy reading the comic books that we grew up with and like. And every time we dip ourselves into AEW or WWE, it's just like, maybe this isn't what I want. It looks like what I want, but it's not really what I want. And I think, oh yeah, we got to go through and tell these stories. We're going to like get to the, you know, we're already in Grant Morrison a little bit. That's iffy. But now we're going to go past that into all these books where we were completely out and have no idea what the hell was happening. And I think that's probably the majority of comic book fans at this point. And now you're telling these stories to a very niche, small audience who, you know, won't pop, wrestling term, you know, when they see something that happens like straight from the comic book, which we're seeing now. So
would you think it's fair to say like that the best MCU, I guess, either movies or shows have been the ones that are more direct adaptations of things that have been in the comics? I was just saying, like Avengers is good, but it's not strictly a story per se. Avengers 2, again, not really. So, you know, Captain America, Winter Soldier, the origin stories, the Civil War to the extent that they pulled it off. Obviously, Infinity War, Endgame, a lot of the origin stories. I mean, those are kind of the best. And that makes me think like, okay, are you going to have told all the original stories in this cartoon over its two incarnations? And so when we do get the X-Men, are you going to rehash those things, or are you going to give us a new story or what? Or have they already earmarked a story that, like we said, is from the current books that it will be, that's what we're trying to get to. Hard to say.
Yeah. Again, we'll talk about it here in a second, but, it feels like all of this is leading to Krakoa, you know, which would be, you know, kind of the last modern era story that we've read. But, and following the writer that got fired on Twitter, you know, he said to go back and watch One Man's Worth, which I think is from season 4, which they do like this BS Age of Apocalypse, or at least a lot of the character designs are from that. And, you know, that's a Nimrod story with Fitzroy in the cartoon. And so, okay. But he had said that, like, oh, no, Age of Apocalypse would need, like, a whole season in and of itself. So we're not getting Age of Apocalypse. So, again, there's a little bit of curiosity about how that, you know, something that we talked about a lot of these Marvel Disney shows. Can y'all stick the landing? The TV shows have been more misses than hits in doing that. cartoon might be a little bit easier to pull off because you're not dealing with the human whatever element. So I'm very curious, but yeah, I just, for this version of this story, if you cared about this story, taking out Dire Race and all of that stuff, you really kind of shortchanged it. And then the ending of it makes no sense compared to what the comic book is, but we're going to talk about that too. All right. So part one of Life Death, Storm is recovering from her loss of her powers with Forge. You know, he kind of picked her up there. They even allude to, you know, what happened in Dallas. Well, what happened in Dallas is the freaking Dire Wraith stuff. But no Dire Wraith. Sorry, Hutch. No ROM either. And we, you know, we start to see their love story unfold. So I went back and read Life, Death 1 and 2. Forge was a dick. Like, he was terrible to her, minus the, what we're going to reveal or whatever. But he was pretty awful to her as she was going through this life-changing event.
Was it, were we supposed to read it as tough love?
I guess yeah. It read like massive misogyny is what it read like in 2024. But she just couldn't, you know, get over this idea, mm-hmm. essentially like kind of let me die. And he's like, you know, I love you, but shut the fuck up, get up, get out of bed. Like it's really bad. And that it reads like 1986 or whatever the hell it is, which is fine. But yeah, he's just not great, you know. And then we get that. We even get Storm in her, you know, her overalls in the cartoon, and she had them on in there. And their love story unfolds in the comic book over time, you know, with dinners and is swimming excursions. And in this, it's like horseback riding and, you know, a little bit of wine too, because I thought Storm never had it before. Or is that in the comic? I can't even remember now. Never drank wine before.
Thing was in
it's in the comic. Yeah, it's just like, ooh, it tickles.
And the first part was like in his like his skyscraper building or whatever, where he had holograms.
The holograms.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, however you feel about that actual story, it's a lot better with Dire Race. Just saying, like, if you're just taking the love story part of that, it's not great. And because, again, you have Chris Claremont. What the hell does he know about writing this kind of crap? And also, it has all the Native American stuff, and it gives him his, you know, his want, his Canadian want to alleviate his Canadian Native guilt by talking about Native American stuff. It's a lot. Not a one-shit book. Anyway.
Chris Claremont. White guilt and black sugar, brown sugar, you know, those two loves
all mixed together. He was like, oh, he's cooking. Yes, he is cooking something here. All right.
Remember so how when we were like in the early days of like the post giant size X-Men, where like every villain they fought was just wanted to hook up with Storm.
Yeah, it's like, ooh.
Like Dracula wants that. Dr. Doom. Exactly. Everybody was
Dracula,
like
Doom. Everybody was like, ooh. Yeah. Anyway, that's awful. Okay, so again, a truncated story. We get the Dire Wraith in there. It goes all the way through, like from Life Death 1 to Life Death 2. I mean, there's a whole big story in there. I think Romita was on the book for a few of those. I mean, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. And then they condensed it into probably between both segments, call it 12 minutes, probably. Maybe 15?
Yeah, it wasn't long.
Yeah, I mean, it goes all the way through. And then, you know, when we get to the adversary, which we're going to talk about here now, then that story is completely off where, you know, what's his friend's name? Nazi. We call him Maze. We call him Corn. Nazi. His Native American friend from Vietnam, who, you know, has some lightweight jealousy himself, and he's the one that winds up unleashing the adversary into, you know, the human world. It's a lot going on.
Well, I think if I'm not mistaken, he gets killed and then the adversary manifests through him. I don't think he unlocks. I don't think he's responsible for bringing the adversary in, if I remember. Yeah, and speaking of, and maybe there's a slide on this, but they completely, like, they might have barely alluded to it, but they completely leave out, like, the Vietnam War, when Forge, you know, opens up the portal and brings the adversary into the material plane to begin with.
Yeah, I don't think I have a slide for it, but yeah, that I think
because they've already, like in this, they've said, you know, he's already guilty of making the technology. Well, guess what? He's also guilty of bringing the adversary,
as well.
Like, he fucked everything up.
Yeah. But I mean, they ride horses, they're in love, and then there's the reveal. All right. So her lack of powers, and as it talks about later, her lack of having her powers and her bitterness from that, as well as Forge's guilt after it's discovered that he created the, you know, the bands that knocked off their power on Genosha, like his guilt over that and having built the government weapon that wound up taking her powers, that brings the adversary out that is attracted to all the bitterness and whatever, you know, her line about, I wish I was human sometimes, to Jean in episode one, comes back to her. And it's alluded to that the reason that she's got all this self-pity and all of this, that's the reason that her powers are gone, not necessarily because of the weapon. So that's a bit of a dip from the comic book, that's for sure. What did you think about that reveal?
Yeah, I was confused because, like, I think I texted you that one day, like, did she just, like, decide...
Yeah, I'm good.
You know, I want my powers back. So it was. I like it. The biggest relief for me is I feel like we are going to avoid 201. Like, that's what this episode did for me. So she might still take the leadership of the team, but not without powers. You know, it was what I did like, that the creepiness of the adversary.
Yeah,
and I like the sound. There's been a lot of the sound design of the show that I really like, and I would assume that the voice of the adversary is probably constructed by layering some of Storm's own voice acting over it. You kind of hear it at times. Sometimes she's like directly mocking her or whatever, and you can see it. But I thought, like, in terms of the way it moved, the way it spoke, like it did very much seem like, I'm that trickster kind of demon. Like, I obviously I can't there for whatever reason, I can't just obliterate you. And maybe this case, because I feed off your energies or whatever, but it had a very creepy demonic nature of it that made it an interesting thing. Like, you could, if there was a, you know, a retcon and this was all in her head, you could still buy that, because that was fundamentally what this was about. This was about Storm, you know, reconciling who she was and, you know, what she was at her core, which is a story that's been told in, you know, over a course of a number of books, just outside of Life Death as well. Like, even the transition to the Mohawk, you know, her reconciliation with what it meant to be the goddess and all those things. So it was definitely a Storm story. I think condensing it, not a bad thing.
Yeah.
What we got was, I think, fine.
Yeah.
It does feel like they artificially made it seem like a longer story just by sticking something in the middle of it.
Right.
But the whole reveal of, like, oh, you know what? I'm done. I want my powers back. That was kind of weird.
Yeah.
So
I agree about the creepiness of the adversary and the way it's filmed as well, or the way it's animated with its head turning. Like, I mean, it's kind of creepy, you know, for a Saturday morning cartoon or Wednesday 3 o'clock in the morning cartoon. So it was fine. Out of that, Forge also gets bit and, you know, has this demonic whatever going through his shoulder, and it's this attempt to save. I mean, it's I think we've said this about a bunch of things. It was like, well, that was the best Life Death story they could have probably told.
Yeah.
That's basically what it is. Like, if you had given too much, it probably would have been too much, and you probably hit it right on the nose. And it feels like, hey, we need to have like a Storm-centric story in this season because she's such an important character. Mm-hmm. And again, honestly, characters of color shunned in many and all like versions of media. So let's give her a story that, you know, people have there. We have Forge in it as well. You know, everybody knows that they have this version of a love story or whatever. We got Bishop out of here, so we don't have that weird part of it. So yeah, we're good. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. I had no real problem with it, you know, moving forward. You know, and then, you know, when Forge does recover and they send it off at the end of Life Death or part two, like, is he using Doctor Strange powers?
Because it definitely
looked like it.
Yeah, it definitely did. Like with the all the rings and the lashing and things like that. Yeah,
and the book on the floor, was that the Darkhold?
I would have to think not. Like he just attributed to, unless there's many instances of the Darkhold, which I don't believe that there is. He attributed to his, you know, what his and my mom practiced desert magic, and some of it stuck. Yeah, like they layered in some throwaway lines on this, just to like, we didn't forget. We just don't have time to fuck with it.
Practicing the white man's magic. That's was that right. Shaman's line or whatever from Alpha Flight? Oh, God. That's John Byrne, though, so we can slide on that one. So as she goes out into the desert to search for his mama's freaking chicken soup recipe cure for his disease, the adversary does come back. We go that obligatory storm forced into, you know, a claustrophobia situation. But again, she finds herself and finds the power within to be able to do that. And, you know, she's able to send off the adversary as she goes through it. And as her transformation is, again, I call it her lemonade moment here, like Beyonce, she transforms back into her OG Dave Cockrum costume. And it was like, what? All right.
Yeah, was not expecting like the culmination of her journey was to get her back to where she started in the book. But I was definitely hyped. I was like, oh shit. Yeah. Hey. So because, you know, her, you know, I think the all black outfit was, I think that was a gold era transition. And then it just kind of weirdly transformed in the comic to the same thing, but white, which never really made sense. And then so I don't know. Her outfit seemed kind of generic in the original run and in the early parts of this. So this was a welcome addition, but yes, completely unexpected.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, okay, all right. I mean, and again, the design looked great. They did it the way they did it. That's fine. I have no problem with it. You know, does that mean we get a return to everybody else? I guess is wearing their costumes that we would be used to, I guess.
I mean, right? Cyclops is still in his Jim Lee era.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I guess the next hurdle is, are we going to get Racer X, which seems increasingly likely. They're going to try and fuck him up somehow. So
So she goes back, love is in the air. They're like, hey, you know what? Let's go off to a desert island. She's like, that doesn't sound like a bad idea. They turn the TV on, and then they get to see the destruction of Genosha. So I hope you weren't going there. Because that would be bad. But that's life death, y'all. Again, we did it in 6 slides. 5 if you don't count the title. I have no problem with it. Seems like a get us from point A to B type of story. It did that. I can't really complain. It's just, again, if you're a reader of the comics, you're going to be like, well, that seemed like kind of quick, but probably the best life death story we could get.
Yeah. I mean, I think you miss out on, like, you know, she was depowered for a total of 4 issues. And she did not appear in all those 4 issues or episodes here. So you miss out on, you know, Storm, part of who she is now is from that experience, which went pretty quick. But, you know, in terms of storytelling, you can, in much the same way that you always want to reflect on Jean being the Phoenix, you probably always want to reflect on Storm having lost her powers so that she could survive without them. So, okay. I mean, it feels like they're just like, you know, we need to put the core elements of these characters. We need to depict the core elements of these characters so that everything's there and we have all our tool set to play with. That's what this show feels like.
Right. Let me tell you something about black comic book fans of X-Men. Let's say they decided to give Storm this particular story where she lost her powers and tried to do it over the course of this series. That wasn't going to work for me, brother. That would not have floated. As much as that story is tied into who she is as a character, you just established her as an Omega level mutant finally to put a nail in that coffin in episode 1. Yeah, we're just going to take her power away for the rest of the time. This is,
fair enough.
No, that wasn't going to work. So, again, life death, y'all. But in the meat in between that sandwich is essentially X-Men 275. Mm-hmm. Essentially. If you've gone back, I think this is one of the last Jim Lee books before he images off. Not too much later. $1.50 for comics, bro. $1.75 for a double size, no less. Jeez.
Wow.
Yeah. This is the story. So we have to go back to...
Hey, what's that over on the left side of the screen?
What, Captain America?
Magneto.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, above Captain America. Hey, now. We don't get a chance to appreciate what they did at the end of that series, the original X-Men, because it's awful. Like, I didn't get a chance to watch those episodes until they said, oh yeah, it picks up right after that episode ends. So you go in and you watch that final episode of the original series and when it aired, and they do like this, you know, this the death of a dream, I think is something, the title of it, and Xavier dies, but he doesn't really die. He goes off with the Shi'ar, but the X-Men all believe that he's dead. And then when episode one picks up, you know, leaves the school to Magneto, and then we're off to the races in 97 here. But we know he didn't die. The comic books know he didn't die. And so telling this story where he goes off with his space boo, Lalandra, picks up really right in this particular episode. And they use a lot of the imagery from here. Thankfully, not the yellow and blue costumes.
Oh, come on. I love the yellow and blue. Oh, these were great.
God, no way. Ugh, I cannot. I never liked them. They should never be dressed alike. I just never feel.
Oh, I
never
love this because, and there was like storyline for this because they were almost all the X-Men were like gone or missing, and it was down to like Forge and Banshee, and he might have been depowered at the time. So Forge came up with these uniforms because it was like body armor. It was their equivalent of unstable molecules. And I like these costumes.
Yeah, and this is Jim Lee at peak powers here, at least peak 90 powers. Like, you know, his ability to, his attention to detail, he could draw faces.
His ability to draw women bending their back in half.
Yes, I mean, he's at his peak powers here. But this book leads us into this particular episode. Did you ever go back and watch that final episode?
I did. It's so hard to watch because the animation is so bad.
Yeah, it's bad. It's really bad. And so, yeah, they think he's dead. He's off with Lalandra. And again, like, y'all saw him take her away. Why'd y'all think he was dead? Nobody called Lalandra on the phone?
They don't know the rule. They should have learned it from episode 5, but, you know, no body, no death. No corpse, no death. I mean, they should have known.
I think that's a straight line from Psych. Nobody, no case, Sean. Nobody, no case. All right. So, yeah. So that's where he is. They believe him to be dead. He's out with Lalandra.
These people have obviously never read an X-Men comic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the X-Men have never read an X-Men comic book in their life. All right. And so we go out to space, y'all, and we get an attack on the Kree by the Imperial Guard led by Deathbird. And this, you know, attack on the Kree starship in there, and I got hyped. The action sequence here is great to see. Even though, like, every time that we see them, they're beating up the X-Men, to see the Imperial Guard there was like kind of hype too. I was pretty excited to see this particular.
Swear, like, some of the. Like, I feel like Guardian or Gladiator, like in this episode, is like they just picked up frames from the previous run and put them in. Like all his moves, I'm like, I think I've seen him do that before. What? Yeah.
If you're on YouTube, the whatever shot, you know, that they had when they were introduced fully, dope. And then you tie it into kind of where we haven't been able to finish it or whatever, but like X-Men 97, you know, that's a Deathbird Lalandra story too, you know, where Deathbird winds up, you know, being one of the last people and joining up with the X-Men to figure out, and at least to the Phalanx Covenant, which is garbage, but, you know, a little bit of a tie into the year that was actually going on. And so we have to have this conversation about Deathbird. I'm a fan. I'm a fan of Deathbird. You not a fan?
Not really. Like, so what her intro, right? She shows up and nearly kills Hutch's boy Colossus, if I'm recalling correctly. So
yes,
I buy her as like the assassin, like bully sister, like, you know, comes in for holidays, gets drunk, throws a, you know, spills over the table, and then like gets out and sends fake apologies afterward. I can buy all that. But like Deathbird, the villain that can like take down entire teams of people, no, I don't buy it.
Yeah. Well, it's you know, she's doing the business of the Shi'ar there, and in the middle of that, or at the end of after that, when we talk about Ronan taking nothing but L's, by the way.
She like the Kree, like
Yeah.
Then that's the thing, like he's supposed to be powerful and has his ultimate nullifier, whatever. He just got, she was like, oh, wait, I got to put this bitch down. So I can take, so I'm my phone ringing, y'all. I got to finish this business. Yeah. Just throws him to the ground.
Yeah, he's got beat up. He got beat in a dance off.
Yeah. Did they specifically say this was Ronan? I think they did. But
yeah, they did. Okay. Yeah, they've
read their name. There may be many accusers. There's like Joe the accuser, Steve. The accuser.
Ronan should hope there's a bunch of accusers because he definitely defiling the pain. I mean, they even referenced the Supreme Intelligence.
Yeah, they did.
Well, and again, if you go back and read 275, spoiler alert for 30 plus years ago, you know, it's a Skrull story.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to establish in there this, we've already gotten Skrulls in MCU, which I think completely suck that they completely botched that completely to me. But you already got, you know, introduced the Skrulls in this too. You know, maybe this is where we're going with this. I doubt it. You know, it would feel a little too Secret Invasion-y, but you know, I wouldn't hate it. But anyway, after she beats the hell out of
they did ruin the Skrulls.
Oh, yeah,
and the Super Skrull.
And there's no getting it back, by the way.
No.
You can we're making Skrulls the good guys? Come on, son.
And I mean, they almost gave us like a band of bad Skrulls, but then they all got punked, and now Daenerys is the Super Skrull, but she has everybody. I don't know.
Yeah. Ruined. That's a terrible show, by the way. Anyway, yeah. So after they beat the hell out of everybody, Lilandra sends out a hologram, save the date, that she's going to marry a Taren. Going to marry a Taren, y'all. And it's Charles Xavier. He's alive. He's walking. You know, via the technology there. He's got on the headgear that we see, you know, again, if you're on YouTube, on the cover of 275. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I mean, it's like, when I saw that, I knew exactly what this was. And I could pull the issue. Normally, it takes me a little bit of time, or Google. But I knew exactly what that was. I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this story completely. And I also remember that there's freaking Skrulls in it. And I don't think that's where they're going with this. But, yeah. So, they're going to get married, y'all. Charles is back. Now, you've had a take about Charles and the X-Men for several years that he can't stay away. Like, even when he's got it good, he has to go back and ruin their lives.
Yeah, he's they're typically better off without him, but yet they're dedicated to him. They're like, it's a, well, you know, that relationship is not functional in the same way like his relationship with Lilandra is not functional. Like, correct. they're like, oh, I love you. You stole my heart as long as you my little bitch and you don't go back home. You know, like, what is their relationship? I don't understand any of this.
Hi. Yeah. Oh, okay. Hi, counselor therapist here. So we call this codependency.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So yes, it is a very codependent relationship on both sides, on Earth and in Shi'ar airspace. And reintroducing Charles back again, I think where this is headed, it's the perfect band, especially when we get to the end of this particular episode. Like, I think I know where we're headed, and it's fine. Like, this is a good comic book story to tell. You're out in space. We establish space is a thing, which they rarely did in the movies, except for in that terrible Phoenix movie at the end. Like, we've established that so we can reestablish it when we go, you know, into the MCU movies. But yeah, Deathbird was definitely like, what? Oh, hell no. So they're going to go ahead and head back. Now, remember, this is interspersed in between life, death, y'all. So we're kind of putting it together if you had seen it. Deathbird had time. when she goes back. And she reads Charles for filth, as the kids would say. She's like, nah, you're not marrying this Taren. This lady's crazy as you're as crazy as the kin. His planet sucks. She called it the Milky Way Ghetto.
She had so she had another line later on where she said something like, I don't want you to mix with his, and checks notes, inferior freak fluids. So I started to like Beth Bird more in this episode just from the bomb she dropped on Xavier, who sucks. She definitely she scored some points in this one.
Yeah, she definitely had time.
The Milky Way Ghetto. I was like,
I was like, man, I mean, and that, since you're not a Twitter person, and again, people are spoiling this crap at like 6 a.m. and so you see like the trends. I'm like, why is Milky Way Ghetto trending? What the fuck is that? And it's like, oh, I got it. Yeah, I mean, and again, it at least, if whether you feel about Deathbird or not, they captured the sibling rivalry between the two of them at 100%. As that comic book has gone on, it's always been a contentious relationship. Even when they're good, they're not. And this, like, captured that completely. And, it's basically her thing is, he's just, and the rest of the Shi'ar, like, he's just too loyal to Earth. That's his problem. He's too loyal to his X-Men. And so if you want to marry her or you want to marry him, he's going to need to denounce Earth. Denounce his X-Men, they got to, mind wipe his memory so he doesn't, remember any of that stuff. And Charles agreed to this bullshit.
And they were like, fortunately, Lalandra is as strong a psychic as Charles Xavier. I'm like, what did this happen?
Yeah, that was a nice little throw in there. But I couldn't believe that he agreed. I mean, again, we're going to get to this in a second, that he even would have agreed to it to begin with, Well,
In a codependent relationship.
Oh, yeah, I know. I said, somebody on Twitter was like, man, the pussy ain't that good. come on, Charles. Anyway, there's going to be a rebellion, though, before we get to that particular point when Charles is supposed to denounce. He doesn't. And
you, you stepped over it, but it looks like, so they used an exoskeleton for him to walk, but it looks like he's not, like, this is the window where he has his legs, but he can't walk very good.
Mm-hmm.
That's, an interesting development in itself. And a lot of that happened around her anyway. So again, stuff from the books, they're just sprinkling in, side shots in here, there, and there.
Yeah, that's when he was walking in the comic books and he was shooting basketball in his boot shorts.
And he had his Flashdance headband.
Yeah,
In his Big Hutch socks.
Yeah, that's right.
Stocking shorts.
Awful. Yeah, Oof. But yeah, Deathbird definitely had the time to let everybody in the galaxy know what she thought about Charles.
Yeah.
And then, as this is going on, this rebellion, he just finally has enough and he's going to take everybody to the astral plane to school them on the dream about, coexistence is messy. It's a struggle. It's all of these things. Now, again, you have to reconcile that with what we're going to hear in episode 7 from Beast, what we heard from Cyclops in episode 5 before Genosha, that Charles is still living in his dream, in his dream world, which is kind of ironic. Yeah, we're going to live this dream of coexistence between humans and mutants, but I'm going to be out here in space. Y'all deal with that shit on Earth.
Mm.
But, the dream is still there. Whereas on Earth, they're dealing with, a massive revolt.
They're dealing with reality.
Yes, on Earth. the reality of it. Correct. And so he gets them all the astral plane. He starts to teach the Shi'ar about that and existence, and we're dependent upon one. You're not more for me doesn't mean less for you. He's trying to get them to understand that. The artwork or the animation in this, amazing. And the capture of, again, we saw it in the original series, but the capture of the Shi'ar that we know from the comic book and from the cartoon, 100% lifts. I hope somebody's getting some residuals or whatever, because they're really just pulling off characters that they design. I'm sure they're not, by the way. But while he's doing that, there's this kind of Death Note moment across the astral plane, you know, where he sees Gambit, you know, fully in death, all his students turn to bones or whatever. And it's just like, what's going on? And it knocks him down to his knees or whatever. You know, what'd you think about that scene?
So I had two takes. One, like seeing Gladiator in class was definitely not his element. He was sitting there sweating like, oh shit, they gonna kick me off the team if I fail this test. Man, let me get those answers. No, it was hilarious. Like him there, he was like, I hope somebody else can pass this test.
Well, to be fair, more than likely if Gladiator's there, it was probably court mandated.
Yeah, it's true. But the other thing too was like the way he broke down the Shi'ar and their like colonization and like, you know, suppression of people to make themselves feel good. That was like that helped me put the Shi'ar in perspective for like maybe the first time ever, because, you know, they've been kind of the good guys, but kind of the bad guys. And yeah, they're bird people, but they're kind of generic and they have technology. We know that, but what are the Shi'ar? And his description of them is like these people who like, you know, bring other cultures under their wing and then like handicap them so that they can't outshine anybody. I was like, okay, I kind of understand the Shi'ar, because like you get the Kree, they're warlike, survival of the fittest, whatever. You get the Skrull, you know, they're sneaky. But like I could never really had a good feel for the Shi'ar until like he broke it down here. So that was useful for me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a powerful enough scene even before you get to the end. When I'm watching it, I'm like, how's this gonna end? Is Gaul gonna walk out together singing Kumbaya? You wouldn't think that this would be enough, even though Lelandra's like, you know, after he gets the death note, he's like, yeah, bitch, I gotta go.
Yeah,
like I can't stay here no more. Like everything on Earth is absolutely terrible.
Yeah,
and I gotta go. She's like, but you had almost convinced them. He's like, I gotta go. Like that.
Yeah, but he hadn't convinced himself, because it was bullshit for him to agree to that anyway. Because he's more codependent on the X-Men than he is on the Shi'ar.
Correct. I mean, they're carrying.
But I think the Gambit as Death, I think, reinforces the theory that he's probably going to come back via the Horseman of Apocalypse, although they do still seem to be steering away from Apocalypse. That does not necessarily seem to be the him that Cable warned us about.
Correct.
But also, like, Gambit's not really one of his students. So, like, for him to be, like, have emotional breakdown over Gambit, that's a little bit of a stretch. I mean, I guess you via Gambit, you have the death of these millions of people or whatever, hundreds of thousands of people. But Gambit was not, you know, he doesn't have a long history with Xavier. He was mostly around when Xavier was gone, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, when he gets introduced. He leaves, heads back to Earth. Deathbird's like, you know, or she's like, you're going to prove Deathbird right. He's like, I'm out, boo. I can't
take it. Yeah,
and then our post credit, we get to see Bolivar Trask running, and then he winds up getting tracked down by Sinister. You know, he had given his DNA or whatever for them to start this Sentinel program or the
seed, son.
Yeah, get the three headed Sentinel monster thing in Genosha. And, again, Saturday morning cartoon. Like, please just kill me. Like, ooh, you don't hear that on Saturday morning cartoons. He's like, just kill me, please. And it doesn't.
Yeah, the one thing they've avoided is, you know, they've given us two stories involving, you know, some depiction of demons / hell that they've skirted around, because the Goblin Queen, they didn't really draw that connection, even though they were in a subterranean area filled with lava and winged like demonic creatures. They stopped short of calling her Demon Goblin Queen of hell or whatever. Exactly. And the adversary is just this probably Native American story, whatever. Like, so I think that seems to be like the heaven and hell aspect and the divinity is one line they don't want to cross. And that's probably for international appeal, if I had to guess.
Well,
but everybody dies, people die everywhere, so we can talk about that.
Well, Sinister makes his reappearance, and, you know, that leads us out of this particular episode And it's like, oh, okay. And much like it has in a lot of the follow-up episodes or whatever, like Genosha leads into nothing to talk about Genosha, essentially.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Life, death leads to this story that has to the end of Genosha or whatever, has nothing to do with life, death. Like, it's like, okay, where are we going here?
Yeah.
And so you would think that episode 7 is going to be like, oh, well, Xavier just, you know, got on the Millennium Falcon and, you know, was headed back to Earth. Nah, son. It's Bastion. All right. So we were talking before, and we're not going to review episode 7 other than in global terms here. Like, Bastion has been revealed at the end of this to be the big bad. You know, that was the books with OZT. I'm like, oh, that's Operation Zero Tolerance. Like, I knew what it stood for. I'm like, but I don't remember the books all that much, because I don't remember like this being this freaking, oh, great X-Men story that was told that, you know, I would go back and read. I just remember like, oh, he was another dude that was kind of like a Sentinel or something like that. And that was it. So they're revealing him now as the big bad for season one, the one that's been controlling all of this. My thing is like, hey, I think this is going to lead to Krakoa. I've been saying this because when Beast gets to Genosha and Trish Tilby tries that bullshit with this, like, hey, come walk with me, you know, hold my hand. You know, I think the line is like, maybe tolerance was a mistake, essentially. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe trying to get your approval was a mistake from Beast. Yeah. I'm like, that's interesting. You know, and then we already had Scott be like, yo, like, this is ridiculous. Like, y'all normal people are f***ing up. And I'm kind of sick of this. And then we have Xavier again in a random headgear. I think the clues are all there. And I think that's where we're headed. So you had an idea, like maybe Bastion letting in this Krakoa type era. If you read the Krakoan books, you know, like an Orcus type situation, you know, an advanced Sentinel maybe from the future.
Yeah, I mean, I also don't remember Bastion very well, but I think it's partly because he was primarily revealed in the crossover era and or the era where it was, you know, the start of the more art is more book era and less story is more book. So more like the kind of just, you know, the era of the artist more so than the writer. So I think it was a visual. He is some sort of, you know, he was layered underneath the Friends of Humanity or whatever, I think, and some kind of Sentinel or whatever. And it was just basically another mutant tolerance episode. But this was well in advance of where Nimrod and or Master Mold was much more organized. So, you know, if you're going to have Krakoa, you have to have Orcus. And so to me, this is potentially a way to bring up, you know, the machines as the enemy, although they haven't really given us the other elements of that, like AIM and Hydra and even SHIELD, you know, the human aspect, the human science part of that as well. So I think you can do more with him if you're getting to that era than they ever did with him in the actual run. Because I don't think we've revisited Bastion in the modern era.
No, we haven't. How would
you know? So,
yeah, exactly. Well, we personally haven't. And so you have this, and what you're saying too, like, oh, well, if you have all of these human elements that are like kind of biting up against the X-Men, well, you have a human team, metahumans of Avengers, but then, you know, they're led by Captain America, who makes an appearance in this with Rogue. And it's just like, oh, okay, that's interesting. You know, even though they kind of had spoiled it ahead of time, you know, and he basically gives the Avengers line like, hey, well, you know, that seems to be y'all business. We got to handle this by the book. I mean, it's a running joke on our podcast that like, yeah, so the X-Men are facing this big threat and they called the Avengers like, hey, we get some help, and we're sorry, this number that you reached is no longer in service,
please call the Fantastic Four if you need
exactly. I mean, they just leave them out to dry, and so they established that too. I was like, I think I know where this is headed. You know, and your definite warning from the previous podcast, please don't do Avengers versus X-Men, I agree with that too, but I think we're going to, you know, Genosha had to die to let Krakoa live. And I think with Xavier coming back, seeing that his dream is literally up in flames and nobody's there willing to help them, you know, the same with Senator Kelly and Cyclops too. Like, hey, wait, we did enough. Like, shit, we did enough. The optics of this look bad. And he's like, what? Yeah. I think that's where we're headed.
Yeah. Well, the other theory I've seen starting to bubble up is this is a bridge into Onslaught, which I don't know how that works. Because that's, I just don't think that's going to work. Now, if it's Professor X is a villain, I think there's ways to do that. That, you know, maybe Professor X becomes the villain and Cyclops kills him. And that case, you know, so because I feel like they're, you know, at most going to bastardize some of the bridging stories here. But I don't know. Like, I like about Bastion as apparently the big bad of this is he's not been overused.
Right.
You know, we've seen a lot of Magneto as the villain. We've seen a lot of Mr. Sinister as the villain. We've seen a lot of Apocalypse as the villain. We haven't seen, you know, Bastion as an organized villain, because whenever we've gotten Nimrod stories, just he's the ultra powerful robot. We haven't seen Nimrod, the calculating entity who is, you know, architecting, in addition to the fact that he can destroy any individual threat, also architecting genocide against mutants. So that's the piece of this we haven't seen yet. And that seems to be more consistent with the story that they're leaning into in this show.
Right. Yeah. And again, the writer of the show said, go back and watch One Man's Worth, like before we get to the 3-part finale. You know, again, that's where, you know, Shard.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Shard and Bishop have to go back and save Xavier from 1959 and, you know, from blowing himself up. But again, the character designs are pretty much from the Age of Apocalypse. But he said that wasn't going to happen. I didn't think about Onslaught there, but it would have been a perfect time to see like Xavier lost his mind there when everybody died. That would have maybe could have sent him over the edge. But I'm not ready for an Onslaught story. You know, and they've revealed, if you look online, that Bastion's been in like almost every episode, you know, in the background and all of this. I'm like, oh, okay. So you've been alluding to this, which is great. But I mean, it's going to be new for us too. I'm like, I'll dig out those books at some point in time and go back and read this. But it wasn't like, oh my God, you remember Operation Zero Towers? That was like, it's not one of those X-Men stories, y'all, at all. It was just another story that happened in the 90s, if it was probably the 90s, I would assume. So I'm okay with it. I'm fine. I had no problems with episode 7. Like, it was good enough. You know, the ending was kind of wild. And Rogue's gone rogue.
Are we going to do a recap episode of that at some point?
Yeah, we will. Okay. Because I think what's going to happen, since the finale is 3 parts, it's probably going to be like, all right, well, we're going to pick this up. Whether either in the middle or at the end, because it's all it's going to do is just a bunch of cliffhangers here. But we'll either start it and then end it and leave the one in the middle. I'm not really sure, you know. And again, in a whatever world, you probably run all 3 episodes in a streaming world at this point.
Yeah,
that's definitely not what's going to happen. Like, no. I know that for a fact. But
they gave us the double hit up front.
Was the 2-part finale, like Night of the Sentinels, in the original series, maybe if it was 2 but 3 episodes, I'm curious that they're gonna make Bastion this big bad, because I don't know if we get that view in the comic book as something that we really, you know, saw. But it's fine. I mean, you had to be hyped to see your boy Captain America in it.
There wasn't the best depiction of him, but you know,
it tracked though.
Yeah. I mean, no, the interaction between Rogue and I haven't read a lot of these, but this, you know, this is the United Avengers or whatever they were.
Yeah.
So the, you know, the interaction of Rogue and Captain America as like almost like peers, that was, you know, that was cool.
I mean, yeah.
Other than Beast, who has had his moments, and Wolverine, who is complete set dressing at this point, and Morph, who is, you know, comic relief still.
Yeah,
I don't know if we're, you know.
Well, yeah, he's you know, we need to get this cameo in relief.
Yeah,
Quicksilver this week.
The main cast: Rogue, Gambit, Cyclops, Jean, Storm have all, you know, gotten big moments. I mean, mm-hmm. this is, you know, this is not just them hitting something hard and using their powers. This is like character development that I think has attracted us to the X-Men for all this time. And so there have been big stories, big arcs for the main, the core X-Men characters, mm-hmm. You know, that we haven't gotten in a lot. So this is, it's great.
Yeah. Again, first round pick, y'all. It is definitely worthy of it. You know, I find myself going back and watching them in pieces. You know, I was like, you know what? Let me go back and see just five or just six, but just the 275 part. Like, I don't want to see the life death stuff. Just skip mm-hmm. through it. You know, just trying to, you know, kind of focus on the story and see where it's going ultimately, but also not knowing and being okay with that too. You know, again, I hate and love the one episode at a time aspect all at the same time, you know, because yeah. I think we've been spoiled by streaming yeah. so much. And if this wasn't a show like that, I was like really like into, and I didn't follow a bunch of people that would spoil it, I'd probably wait in between issues or episodes just because you're yeah. like, you know what? I like to watch it in bulk, or, you know, in a block now because, you know, to keep the story together in my head. But I think
too, the cliffhangers aspect of this where they've broken up stories, I think is a little bit artificial in some cases too. And yeah. I think then that disjointedness is exacerbated by the fact that they're only giving us one a week.
Yeah, like, the week long thing.
Mm. It wasn't so much like we took the main arc up to a point. Now let's spend 2 to 3 episodes to catch up with where everybody was, you know, doing at this time. It kind of is, but not really. It feels like I keep making the joke, like, I think only half the production team was given the information yeah. that it was 22 minutes instead of 30, and then they yeah. just had to put them all together. Yeah. So it feels like it might have been, they could have maybe blocked out the stories a little bit differently from episode mm-hmm. to episode, yeah. Because it does feel like time passes because they want you to wait to get the yeah. rest of the story, more so than it makes any kind of narrative sense. But,
and that was the other part, and like I said, we're wrapped almost to an hour, so this is where I wanted to say this. So the recap or the cap over there, besides the freaking ridiculous song that plays out on the outro there. So Bastion has Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
But we saw Magneto die on Genosha, allegedly.
Nobody.
Yeah. Nobody, no case, Sean. Nobody, no case. But could that have been Joseph?
Oh,
that would be right up with 97 in the comic books. And I'm trying to figure out how you're going to thread that needle, because the Joseph story is really weird. And we haven't told the story of the mind wiped Xavier or mind wiped. You know what I mean? Like, we haven't yeah. gotten anywhere there, but I'm wondering.
But we have Sinister cloning people.
Correct.
And he's in the story. So,
yep. And we already have Madeline floating out there as a clone too. So I wonder if we saw the death of Joseph, and Joseph was the one leading the X-Men with all the implanted memories that he was supposed to have, and he died. But then we have the real Magneto with Bastion there, giving him a freaking very Silence of the Lambs shave at the end.
Yeah.
That freak, I was like, this is kind of creepy. Like, this would have not floated on Saturday morning, y'all.
Yeah. That's yeah, and that, and I don't recall like Bastion ever having some of the nuanced, you know, villainish characteristics yeah. that he's shown here. And so I think we are getting, you know, we're getting, you know, almost a unique version of him for this show, just yeah. drawing from source material for the design and maybe right. some of the concept. And I can't remember when he's getting his shave, although he takes the razor to him, and I never saw it. He still had his
yeah.
like 2:30 o'clock shadow or whatever. yeah. But did Magneto still have his purple like stripper outfit on? I can't remember what it
was. Yeah, I think he did. I think he had on his business suit from where he died in Genosha, I think. I have to go back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think he still had that suit on, which would be
weird. That would undercut your theory, but
yeah.
it's an interesting one.
Yeah, it's there's something weird going on with that, obviously. All right. All right, y'all. So we'll be back Not quite sure. It's probably going to be like, you know, on our Bengals thing, we have like, oh my God, Joe Burrow's throwing again. Emergency pod, emergency pod, emergency pod. So it's probably going to be one of those things, because if something happens, if they name drop Krakoa in episode 8 or some shit like that, mm-hmm. remember? Yeah, emergency pod. Yeah, we couldn't wait. We're just going to put it together. And I think that's probably where we are for the most part. And we'll kind of get through this. But it's been great, y'all. I think X-Men leads into What If season 3, I believe. I'm not crazy. And then whatever that plays out. And then season 2 for this is supposed to premiere. I thought I heard it in late 2024, but I could be completely crazy.
I wonder if they're going to pull now X-Men characters into What If, which would be amazing.
Oh, no, they're supposed to be in What If.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, right. Yeah, in season 3. Actually, it might make me watch it. So
season 2 was not great. Season 1 had some decent ones, but season 2 was...
Yeah, it's really weird. It's a weird show. It's what's that kid expression? It's doing too much. Like, it's doing way too much. So, all right, y'all. All right, so that's it. We'll be back shortly thereafter, and we'll go from there. So as a producer, I'm signing off. X-Men Animated Music is playing out on the podcast side. I'm going to sign off. Go ahead and sign off, Brother Beaver.
See y'all next time.
Maybe we'll get my brother to finally watch this show, by the way. Who knows? Doubt it. All right,
not until his boy shows up in it.
That's fair. Peace, everybody. Good job. Good effort. I did not stop the record. I don't know. Shout out. I hit the...